So today we have with us Avital Shtapura, who at Team Gary Vee works as a comic artist and edits Gary's TikTok content. I recently noticed that he's even younger than me. That came as a surprise because he does so much that I kind of forgot that. He's a 20-year-old Brooklyn kid who was born to USSR videographer parents in Israel. He's a trans guy and a graduate from the School of Visual Arts, NYC. With the 10 songs already on his Spotify, the dude's also a voice actor and is just hilarious in his Instagram stories and TikTok videos. He's currently pitching a musical comedy / drama cartoon pilot titled Chasing Gracie.
Hi, Yasa. Thank you so much for this incredible opportunity. I wanted to say I love that description of me. It very well encapsulates my whole journey and my desire to be that kind of Renaissance man who does a bunch of random crap, but that really, like, feels it from the soul in terms of, like, yeah, I have all these songs, I have all these art pieces, I have all these random projects that I keep plunging myself into, and I think that's something that I've always sort of done as a child. I was already, like, yeah, I'm going to make a website for no reason as like a 6-year-old on PowerPoint and website builder that's on Windows XP. But I always have been the kind of person that just thinks of something and has to accomplish it really fast, finish it, and put it somewhere. Or else I just don't feel that exhilaration of adding something to the world. So I think that that is incredibly important. And I'm so, so excited to answer whatever questions you prepared. I know they're going to be cool ones. Thank you.
You have such great energy, dude. Okay, coming back to this. You see, through this podcast, there is really only one thing that I wish to cover. And that's the different fields that exist for a writer. And you here are, among other roles, the writer and director of this animation film, Chasing Gracie. So, any tips for someone aspiring to write for an animated TV show? I know I'd love to write an episode for the 90s Teen Titans if they bring it back and I had the chance.
I love this question. Of course, I also aspire to write for an animated TV show. It's difficult because, you know, what it really is being in the right place at the right time and literally being asked, hey, can you write for this? Because, you know, it's just literally a job like any other, and the job like any other requires you to be in the right place and get the connection or whatever. But I would say the actual writing process, listen, it's incredibly all about practice, but not the kind of practice that people say. I would say the real practice is making a script, finishing it, posting it, and waiting for somebody to read it and see what they say. Versus, oh, I'm just going to write, and then I'm going to bury it under my bed, and no one's going to find it. See, that's the issue that people consistently face that I've seen. For example, they say, oh, I want to write. And I say, okay, show me what you've written. Oh, but I haven't published it anywhere. Therefore, how can you call yourself whatever you want to call yourself? Because everybody that is successful in terms of actual artwork and things, the only thing they all have in common is that they've put their work out there. Because no one, you know, no one's going to pull an Emily Dickinson where they find everything after you're gone and say, wow, I can't believe this genius didn't do this. That shouldn't be something that is romanticized. I believe that it's okay to have all your crappy stories from when you were 7 out in the world. You could definitely find everything I've ever written is out there on the internet, on fanfiction.net when I was a child, when I was 11. You can go ahead and find all my crap, and that's the process. I think the process of seeing where you started, where you're going, and, you know, the only way you get better at writing comedy, which is what I really focus on, and, of course, drama, comedy drama, is you have to start with an idea, write it, post it. That's really the way that you learn. And I would say, I love Teen Titans too. Obviously, Starfire is my favorite because she's so, you know, peace-loving. I would say that definitely go ahead and write a script. You know, there's something special about you writing it versus, I don't know, the writer on the staff or whatever. It's very much, you know, taking an idea and fleshing it out, that's the hard part. Anybody can have the idea, but the actual writing of the characters and trying to keep them in character, it's like a muscle you have to flex. Just something that you got to get used to. And I think absolutely, if you're into that, write a fic. Write a fanfic. I advocate fanfic so much. I think that's the only way people learn. And essentially, everything that we work on that isn't our own thing is a fanfic. The people who write on SpongeBob are technically writing SpongeBob fanfiction that just turns canon because they have to be a fan of what you do. So that's my opinion. I think just go ahead and, you know, anybody that wants to do something, do it, finish it, post it, and get it over with, and then in 2 years, you'll be proud of yourself. And you shouldn't delete it after 2 years, even though that's what people do. I don't like that.
Now, this is something that I'm really curious about. What are your thoughts regarding the writing and animation of the Sonic movie?
Oh my god. I can't even answer this question without getting excited, because that was really an incredible feat, I would say, on the writer's standpoint. Because, oh my god, what an incredible movie in terms of the likability of Sonic. The fact that they introduced the character to people that both know it and don't know it in such a wildly approachable way. And, you know, I can't believe that he was, I mean, besides the actual way that they made him, you know, adorable versus the monstrous corporate, like, weirdo that he was prior to the re-editing of, or remodeling of the whole movie. Man, what's his name? Dr. Robotnik? I was initially upset when I saw that he didn't have an orange mustache. I was very hoping for him to look like the Pingus version of himself from, like, 2006 YouTube poops. But I will say, Dr. Robotnik was excellent. He was such a fun villain. You know, the one thing about villains, I personally love villains because I feel like they're an incredibly hard character to write while keeping them not too offensive, not too, like, heinous, not too awful to even relate to. I think what makes him such an excellent villain is that he's evil, yes. He presumably destroyed a country, but he does it with such an incredible excitement. He loves to be evil. He lives for it. It's such a great thing to see. It reminds me of, you know, Plankton Gru, for example. These are people that love to be evil, and it just fills them with glee, and you get to join in on that, even though it's like a guilty pleasure. Versus a lot of, like, a problem I see in a lot of anime is that the villain is just sort of bored and detached, which I think is not nearly as fun to watch as someone who is just full of energy and just shooting it out like lightning. It was just wonderful to see Jim Carrey take that, like, role. But even his acting aside, the script itself was so expertly written with the perfect balance of such, like, specific and strangely funny jokes that are both physical and, like, speech-wise. I just thought it was such a great way to see the whole world. I think the most ridiculous joke they actually did was get that moment in France with the mime. That was so weird. I feel like that was, it was very cartoony. It almost gave me like a Genndy Tartakovsky Hotel Transylvania kind of vibe. Because, you know, I loved Beavis and Butthead Do America for the way that they made me feel like they really did traverse the entire country. And I feel like Sonic the Movie did do that as well. I really felt like I was in many places. And that's what separates a movie like that versus something like Beauty and the Beast, the original, wherein it's also an animated movie. But the problem was, I felt like that town was so small. I only got to know about 5 people in it versus, you know, in Sonic, there was just such life to all the extras. All of the people at the tavern were memorable. All, you know, every waiter and the government official at the end who started talking about Olive Garden. That was awful, I would say. The product placement was just cringeworthy. But, oh yeah, and the guy who was, you know, showing those drawings of Sonic and he had the Sonic. I think that's what really makes the script powerful is everybody feels real. Everybody has motivations, and everybody at the end sort of got what was coming to them. You know, the quote unquote crazy guy saw Sonic. The cop and his wife became closer, which she was a great written wife, by the way. Great written. She had so many things going for her. She had that incredible sister. The sister had that incredible child. And see, as I talk about this, I think, wow, there was love put into these characters. They weren't cardboard cutouts. They were actually very fleshed out and very good characters script-wise, even if, like, as a book it would have worked. And then The actors did a great job taking the extra mile and making it incredible too. So that was a rant about how much I adore the Sonic movie. If I will ever work on something like this, I would be just overjoyed. Just overjoyed because it's just so incredibly done. But I would like to be in the storyboarding or writing part versus the animation part because, you know, the big Hollywood productions, they're very much impersonal when you get to the animators. They can't really make any decisions. And I feel awful for all those people that made that original model. We're cringing the entire time. And then some corporate honcho says, oh yes, please change it, which is just ridiculous. But it was incredibly pulled off. I will definitely... I'm still trying to look up who did this, who made the writing so good, and who it was that put so much love into the script. I'm still trying to figure that out, and I will be a fan of theirs, for sure. Thanks for this question. It's just fun to talk about.
Now, this is another thing that I'm like real curious about. What are your suggestions on the animation movies for one to watch that, according to you, were extremely well-written from both dialogue and plot point of view?
Man, it's very interesting to me that everybody is always pining over all of the Pixar movies when in reality, a lot of them are written well, but not perfectly. For example, people are always talking about Up, but they actually, if you examine the ending, it's such a convoluted and crazy catastrophe at the end that I feel like it just loses all the subtlety in the beginning of the movie. It's actually very difficult for me to think of movies that I... found incredibly well written. I would say I thought Despicable Me, the first movie, was one of the best script-wise movies I've seen because of all of the characterization, the jokes that were so memorable with the time where he was flirting with that lady and called her a donkey in Spanish. Later she comes back with the book and slaps him. It was just incredible in terms of characterization. Once again, a really good villain that really did have to completely lose everything. I think the point where I realized that Despicable Me had an incredible script as a child when I first watched it was when I saw, oh my goodness, he's gonna come, get the moon, and then make it on time to his ballet rehearsal for his adopted daughters. Goes there, and it's gone? That blew my mind. I have never seen that in a movie before for children, that there was such an incredible climactic thing, and it was and everybody would say, oh, you have to follow that up with the incredible climactic, another high, but then it just dropped into the ground and he ruined everything, and he was a terrible father in that moment, and he really cared and he felt so incredibly bad. And I think, and plus the physical nature of showing him in that astronaut suit that was stained pink and having him go there just to see that empty seat where he could have been and he wasn't. And it's such a small thing too, stealing the moon versus going to your daughter's ballet recital. What an incredible contrast, and what the audience cares more about in that moment, that he didn't make it to those girls' one ballet recital out of 300 or however they're gonna have. Wow. And the girls forgiving him at the end of the movie was just so, so special. I think putting us in the shoes of a character like that, who showed us that he absolutely changed, that he would have never given, you know, he wanted to kill pretty much the girls. He wanted them, he was using them as a prop, and then to say fuck everything to his own mission, to his biggest goal, to his career, just to go to something so small and special is just heartbreaking. I think, plus, I mean, besides the fact that it was a hilarious movie, there was so much going on with the accent, with the dialogue, with the characterization of the girls. I just think it was such a well-done movie. Kudos to Spa Studios for the original idea. And it's just such a great film. I think nothing can compare. Even something like Megamind, which people continually praise, I would say the romantic subplot always felt a little bit more just forced and unlikely and unsatisfying, at least to viewers that, I don't know, humanize women more. Just because it was just a love triangle, the essential script of it, Megamind, versus Despicable Me, which is about actual, real love. You know, it's something that I really found beautiful. I think that was I noticed that you said animated movies, but I accidentally just said my favorite. But, I mean, besides that, I would say Beavis and Butthead is another incredible animated movie. Persepolis is a wonderful movie for anybody that wants to understand the life of, you know, being in war versus love and compassion and finding oneself. That's a beautiful film, Persepolis. And another one that is absolutely one of my favorite animated movies of all time, Triplets of Belleville. Wow, that movie, it basically is dialogue-free, but with the characterizations, the jokes, the humor, the plot, the way that everything moves, it's just such a beautiful movie by Sylvain Chomet, and I absolutely super, super recommend The Triplets of Belleville. And the music, incredible. I love the 30s, 1930s, so I felt very, very inspired by that film. I would say those are... So, once again, Despicable Me, Persepolis, Triplets of Belleville, Beavis and Butthead, incredible, incredible movies.
I see that you have a presence on Spotify too. Or do you write your own lyrics? Who composes the music?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked about Spotify. So, yes, I do write my own lyrics. I do compose my own music. It's actually really tough to do it all because at the end of the day, people don't really understand the gravitas of it. Like, I always assumed that all my favorite people in the music industry did their whole shaboodle, you know? But then it turns out, I don't know, Mika, if I'm saying it correctly, Mika doesn't write his own music. Somebody else does. You know, Taylor Swift writes the song and everybody else does it instrumental and she just sings over it, you know? And so realizing this was sort of heartbreaking as a kid, so I made it my own personal mission that I would really try to do it all. And so I always had an affinity for the keyboard because we had one in the living room and I would just like do a bunch of crap on it. But I noticed already early on, similar to animation, I don't like doing the grunt work. I don't like learning tempo. I don't like forcing my hands to learn complex melodies. I can't play you a song perfectly. But I did, when I was, I think, 11, I got an iPad, and iPad had GarageBand. And that's when I said, oh, holy crap, I can make a song. It corrects my beat for me. And I get to just, you know, actually come out with a finished song. Oh, but even before that, prior to that, when I was around 10, my dad had a GarageBand in his Mac upstairs. So I would go upstairs, just fiddle around, make a song. And then I would, you know, send it to myself as an MP3 and say, wow, I made a song, you know, and put it in the iTunes library. And I just always was obsessed with songs. You could actually find me singing over my keyboard's preset songs when I was, I think, 9 years old. You could look up I Like to Babysit by Avital 1999. And there's other ones as well by me when I was a kid. They could see, like, The Monsters in My Closet. That one was written by me and my brother and my sister helped me with the lyrics. But, yeah, I think, like everything else, I like to do it myself because I don't judge myself if I quit. And I know exactly what I want and nobody else's energy is interfering with that. I've always been incredibly possessive about my music in particular because it's something very, very personal to me. I have very specific taste and I like to do things different than everybody else. So, yeah, I do love, I do love making music, and I've been making music for, I believe it's 6 years, maybe a little bit more than 6 years actually. But yeah, I was incredibly bad for the first year. I have this mantra that I always have to cry before I learn a program. So I've cried to GarageBand, and then I learned it. Just like Source Filmmaker, just like Maya, just like Adobe Animate, just like Photoshop. First you cry. I literally have to use it until I get so frustrated that I start crying, and then I can actually get stuff done. But yes, I legitimately did a lot on Spotify. I have literally hundreds of songs. I have only released about, 10, 20. But I have to release more because, honestly, the only reason that I release it is that when I'm sitting at work and I think of a song and it's my own song stuck in my head, I could listen to it. That's the only reason I even make music in the first place. I hear it in my head and I have to put it out because I hear it so clearly in my brain and I want somebody else to share that with me, you know, versus animation where it's very much predetermined. Like, okay, I want to do this. I want it to be empowering. I want it to be funny. I want it to be, you know, diverse and just like it's very pre-planned versus my music is just like, yo, bean sprout. Like, it's very impulsive and it's very struck by lightning kind of type. So I would say that is my manifesto about why I make my own music, totally. I remember I did want to work with people, but it's just so tough. And everybody has schedules and everything, but my music writing is so incredibly on the spot. You know, sometimes I don't even write the lyrics. Sometimes I just sing them. Like, I don't even write them down. So the first time I write them is when I go on Rap Genius and I just transcribe what I actually sung. But yeah, I'm really proud of where I've come in terms of music. I never had a teacher. I learned all the chords by myself. I can't read note music, but I did have a NoteFlight account where I did make music as well with the web app. It's like you just write a score like Beethoven, except you're clicking it instead of drawing it. So yeah, I did have an incredibly difficult journey with music, and I was frustrated for many a year, but now I'm finally making music that I could sort of imagine in my head. I actually worked on a song earlier today about my feelings and regarding being at home and, you know, with the pandemic of coronavirus and stuff like that. So, but it wasn't really about that. You know, I only realized what my songs are about 2 or 3 years after I listened to them. And I say, oh my God, this was about, you know, being trans. Or, oh my God, this one was about, you know, suffering with a partner I didn't like. You know, it's very interesting how much music means to me and how much I really suffer and I'm able to ease my suffering with music. I actually used to sing a song, the same song, every single day on the last day of summer, and I would record it. But I only have 2 videos of it, unfortunately. But, and now I can't make any more because I'm done with school. But yeah, it's very interesting. And I definitely, I respect myself a lot for crying for so many years and then finally getting better. Thank you for asking about this. I really love talking about my music.
While researching you, I noticed something curious. You have an account on Grid Daily, Film Freeway, Redbubble, Threadless, Teamwork.tf. While the first two are like sites that show one CV, there is a lot of art on Redbubble and Threadless. And you used to put out a lot of animations on the Teamwork site. How long have you been actively putting your craft out on those sites? More importantly, how did you find time to do so much?
I have accounts on so many things. Comic Fury, Neopets. But I really, really, I didn't realize that Teamwork.tf had a site for me. That's interesting. So I absolutely loved Team Fortress 2. It was an enormous chapter of my life that I'm so proud of. When I was 11 years old, I got into Team Fortress 2. Because of the hot man, which is awful, I was 11 years old. I looked like a baby, but I was already like, oh yeah. So I realized, you know, behind these weirdly, you know, sexual videos, there are a bunch of, there's a video game and there's a whole fandom and there's so much going on and there's music and there's drawings and there's comics and there's fanfiction and there's videos. And it was just a world of incredible humor, incredible characterization, and I was just obsessed. So what happened with me with Team Fortress 2 is I got into it, and then I started playing the game a whole year after, because for that whole year I was trying to understand my role in the Team Fortress 2 community. Like, what can I do? Can I draw? Can I write? And that's what really started pushing me to learn Source Filmmaker, the 3D animation program, because if I have the characters in my own hands, I could do anything with them. You know, I don't have to be closed off by the fact that I can't animate, I don't know, hair or, like, you know, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I have the, like, the boys, and all I got to do is move them and find some audio for them to sing to or dance to or whatever. It's so much freedom. So I said to myself, okay, I'm going to learn. I cried, obviously. Then I learned Source Filmmaker, and it was the most tough thing I've ever done. It was grueling. I would come home, I would spend hours on Source Filmmaker, and also play the game, of course, because it's a fun game. It's pretty much like Overwatch 1. I really, really, really loved the lighthearted take on the world that Team Fortress 2 had. You know, it like, they, sure they had death, sure they had brutality, but it was with such a nice and comforting humor. It, like, made everything not matter, especially when you're 12 years old. You're like, holy shit, like, this is the first time I've ever seen something so unabashedly, for me, you know, so energetic, so loving, so accepting, with such a welcoming community. So I started making videos, and then eventually, you know, I picked up speed. I started getting really good, and then I started getting fans, and all of a sudden, like, prior to that, I started writing fanfics. There was something called trollfics, which is you write purposely bad things on purpose. So, but it's also a good excuse to just start writing crap and posting it. And so, under the guise of it being ironic, so I would just say, you know, hey, you hate this? Good. You're supposed to hate it. And that was a really good excuse for me to just start posting stories and not worrying about what people think. So, you know, my stories were very, very good. They were very satirical. I was inspired by things like, well, not anymore, but I was inspired by things like South Park and, like, you know, Adult Swim type of humor where it just goes to the extreme. Like, a lot of people would ship these two characters and put them in a relationship together, and I made this whole story that just lampooned their relationship so hard. Like, you know, one of them was French and the other one was Australian, and they just consistently say, like, super, like, incredibly stupid things, like, oh, I'm French, you will let me suck a frog, you know, and the other one's like, so it was like, I found it so funny, and luckily I had a friend named Raven Ruffini. She's incredible, she's hilarious, she really, wow, she inspired me so much. But the main thing that she would inspire me to do is, at school, in middle school, she would push me to, like, write stories, you know, like, she would say, hey, write a story about this, like, please, I gotta see it, come on, Avital, do it. And so that was such an incredible drive, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm getting into character, you know, in class. I would, like, write journal entries as the characters, you know, and that would, like, that was a little bit of acting that I learned, you know, the whole, like, what do you call that, method acting, you know, getting into the role, and that's something that you have to do when you're writing a script, you have to see it from the perspective of every character. And let me check how many stories I've actually written. So via writing fan fiction, 13 Fortress 2, I got so incredibly good at writing comedy, in my opinion. Of course, they're incredibly, what's it called? Offensive. They're incredibly, you know, amateur. You could tell that it's, like, not good. But at the same time, I don't know, I was just so happy to be doing it. So I think that's something very special to me. Okay, I found how many stories I have. I have actually 16 stories, but the first one is Scout Decides to Grow Balls, which is the worst title I could fathom, and it was just this awful, awful thing. But see, at the same time, I'm not deleting it, because this is all my journey. Like, here's TF2 goes to Disney World, and it's, like, written in such a terrible way. Oh, God. And it's, you know, it's ironic. I think that's the whole thing. It's ironic. And you can find all my fanfiction on Maggot Magnet, Maggot Space Magnet, fanfiction.net. I'm proud. And this was a gateway into me animating. And me animating was a gateway into me realizing that, yes, this was, in fact, was my career. And it always has been, making cartoons. That's what I do. And I'm very, very happy that I got into TF2, because it led me to believe, wow, people can actually be a fan of me, like, me, Avital Shtapura, you know. So that's crazy. And I didn't even realize teamwork.tf had a page of me. That's so cool. They say, oh, first known TF2 video, who made this? This is so cool. Holy shit, man, that's incredible. Somebody sat there and, like, put my link in. That's so nice. Man, I love TF2. I miss it. I remember when the fandom died. It was a very, very sad day for me. And, you know, it was when the SAGTI Awards were not renewed. We had every year we had animation awards, and I joined the second year, and as a 13-year-old, and I actually got honorable mention, which is really cool. But yeah, I remember the first year that it didn't happen anymore. That was when I said, okay, like, to myself, okay, you don't have a fandom anymore. Basically, your family sort of all went their separate ways, and what are you gonna do now? You know, when you're in a fandom, you get so many more followers versus when you're like an island and you just have to get people to come to your island versus you're on a huge landmass and everybody comes visit you in the village versus you just going to your own island saying, hey guys, I make videos and cartoons, wanna see? Versus, hey, here's your favorite character doing a kickflip. And people will be like, holy shit, that's so cool. So it's hard, it's tough to be separated. But, you know, I still work with people who are in the industry. You know, Antoine Delac, who's an incredible person, I'm a huge fan of. We ended up, you know, talking after the TF2 fandom kind of passed away. We still started talking. So I think it's just so cool that so many connections that I've made in that family have remained with me, and they're still my close friends. So yeah, I think it's incredible. I think it's a huge part of my life that I'm very, very, very proud of, and I will continue to be proud of it forever, and I hope to one day make something that's as special as Team Fortress 2 for somebody else and help them realize that art and music and writing is what they want to do too. So that's my story.
My final two questions are for listeners that are writers but also happen to love drawing. You have been learning animation and have even studied screenwriting during your 7 years at SVA. Obviously, you really loved it there. What do you think an animation school like SVA gives a person that would be really difficult, if not impossible, if one takes the route of self-learning?
Oh, man. So, yes, writers who also happen to love drawing, I would say SVA was incredible in terms of actual pre-college, because that's sort of their trailer for the actual school. The actual school itself, I would not recommend it because they're just so splayed out and they barely try, and they demand so much money out of you for nothing quite at all, and you don't get too much to show for it. So I personally was very disappointed with it, but obviously it was my dream school. When I was 12 years old, I was already writing, you know, what I'm going to do there and what I'm going to be there when I was 12. But yeah, I think it's something that anybody can tackle. You know, as long as you have the drive, as long as it's something that you're passionate about, you should absolutely look up classes and courses. In the animation industry, it doesn't really matter where you come out of, as long as you attend events, have a big online presence, and you get to know people, and that's really how it all happens. And sometimes college can be the best way, but even Twitter or Instagram, I mean, Instagram to a lesser extent, because Twitter is so familial and people are so close to each other. I would say you don't really need all that college anymore. You can just go ahead and just, like, learn animation via classes separately, like a la carte, kind of. Or you could even just go ahead and just learn by posting and getting better slowly. But really, it's all about just having the program in your hands and just learning it versus having a teacher yell at you, okay, press S, press Z. You know, you don't need all that. Like, what you just need to do is have the drive to create something. And then you say, okay, I want to make a circle that spins around for a video. Then you Google how to make a circle that spins around. You know, I'm the kind of person that I'm a proponent of learning exactly what I need to learn and nothing more. You know, I don't want to know how to make a gradient and animate because I don't use those. It's just extra knowledge that I don't need versus, okay, I need to do this. I'm going to learn how to do just that. So I think anybody that wants to get into animation, go ahead and just download a program, a really good one, like Photoshop like Animate. Photoshop is more for painting or photo manipulation. And just go ahead and go at it and post. And don't worry about what people say because you're a noob. And it's okay to be a noob. Like, everybody's a noob at some point, you know? So I think just go ahead and learn. You know, there's nothing stopping you except for your own judgment and the judgment of people that don't matter. Anybody that is nice and does matter should support you. And, you know, I just think that everybody should be a Renaissance man or woman or non-binary person because they should just learn to, you know, do it all. Because then you could really express yourself in any way you want.
What has been your motivation to draw and has kept you at it in difficult times?
It's so, so hard to say what really motivates me to draw because it's something that something so mysterious that even I don't quite know. I started drawing when I was literally 1 year old. I was like given a bunch of books, you know, just like to look through when I was one. And I would just take a pen and I would just defile all of them with a bunch of like little graffiti stick people. My parents actually encouraged that, weirdly enough, to these like tomes, like these like, I don't know, encyclopedias. I would just like deface them and they would say, oh, how cute, you know. And I think the encouragement is really what helped me. And so when I was 6 years old, I was put into this incredible after school drawing thing across from my elementary school, like across the street. There was this old Russian man who was just, his name was Arkady, and he would just help me in terms of, like, bullying me into saying, no, you have to draw the shadow. And, like, this was when you're six, you don't draw shadows. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't draw a cup with lighting. You just draw a cup shape, you know. But he was bullying me into saying, no, do this. And I think, you know, drawing just came so naturally to me. And it was such a part of my identity growing up. Like, I remember when I realized that avatar and artist sort of looked like similar words, I said, oh, wow, this is perfect. I'm going to be an artist, you know. And I think I thought that probably when I was around 5 or 6, when I really learned English. And it just, I find it so beautiful that I've always just been obsessed with cartoons. And I think, like, nothing can ever really tear me away from that, because I know that since, like, my very first moments, I was just sure that this is what is special. You know, I just, it's like, I can't, it sort of makes me cry to imagine not being able to draw. Like, even if I, for example, had some kind of problem, like an accident or something where I wasn't able to have hands or something, I would still try to find some kind of way to visually express myself. It doesn't matter, you know, it's, visual expression is something that goes beyond my realm of understanding. I don't know if I believe in souls or not, but there's something that just in me, it's like the cave paintings, you know, it's just, I forgot the name of the town in Spain, but the, you know, it's like those buffalo paintings, like good luck telling a human that they can't do that anymore. It's something in them that tells them they have to, you know. And so even though I haven't been making art that I consider art, which is an expression of raw, uncensored emotion for a while, I have been making comics, and that really, that satiates it. But, you know, at some point I want to have all the materials so that I can impulsively make art whenever I want. Like, I think the problem currently is that I don't have an easel, I don't have paints, I don't have everything to my demand. You know, when I was in high school, I loved AP art because I could at any moment, oh, and I took it for, I believe, 2 years, at any moment I could just go in and say, okay, I want to make an ink cutout that looks medieval, blah blah blah, and they would have all the utensils, versus me at home where I have 3 pencils and 2 pens, and if I think of a beautiful marble style painting, I can't make it. So I think eventually getting to a place where I have all of these things at my disposal is gonna be like a heaven similar to AP art. Because I don't know how many people are aware of it, but AP Studio Art is this program that American schools have where you could literally, you have an hour or 45 minutes to make any art you can, as long as you make 14 by the end of the whole school year. So literally you go in and there's nobody telling you what to do. And it scares people. Some people are scared of it. But for me, it was like, okay, let's do it. And then I had this rule for myself that I said to myself, you can make a masterpiece in 20 minutes. And I still stand by this rule. I think you can make a masterpiece. I mean something that can change human civilization forever in 20 minutes. It's all you need. People tell you, oh, you need a year, you need a blah, blah, blah. No. You, like, it's all about taking the emotion that you have and expressing it. That's what The Scream is about. That's what Mona Lisa is about. That's what nudes, having the lunch is about. Like any artist, or munch, you know, like, I think any artist, you know, Picasso, Munch, I love Grant Wood, he's incredible. I like anyone, their real genius is not how they paint. It's about how they take that emotion And they carried across all the way as far as it can go 100% and show it to you and say, do you feel this too? And you say, oh my God, I felt the same exact thing you felt before. And that's the beauty of art. That's what makes art great art, is how well can it show you that emotion and how well can the audience relate, you know? So it's really like, it's sort of double-sided, but that's why people, you know, who are not art professionals, and they say, oh, a good artist means photorealism, you know? That's not it. I think a really good museum to show that is the Visionary Art Museum in Maryland. It's the best because these are it's outsider art, which means art not made by people who, you know, had 30 years of art training. It's people that had visions, some of them schizophrenic, some of them religious, and they show it to us. And if they are a good artist, you feel like you too have this vision and it scares the shit out of you. Like there's someone who made this incredible painting, floor to ceiling. And it's just the most horrifying thing I've ever seen of a bunch of people. And it's like the horrors of World War II and like piles of people. And it's so incredibly horrifying that when I saw it, I burst into tears and I was standing there for about 10 minutes, unable to move. That is great art. And I think as long as somebody has a passion that is that powerful and that strong so that they can go ahead and be enraptured by it their whole life and know that it's the right thing for them, that's just the most powerful thing there is. And I think I've never seen anything except for art as something that I can possibly do. So I'm very happy with that being my life goal, my life journey, is just how well can I show an emotion? How well can I get other people to feel what I'm feeling? It's very social. Art is very social. So that's my thoughts on art. My incredibly long-winded thoughts. It's a very, very beautiful question.
It's been incredible having you on. Finally, let's wrap this up. Avital, the stage is yours. Feel free to talk about anything you'd like. And do tell them where they could find you over on social media.
Yasa, I just wanted to thank you again. It was so incredible just to feel that somebody really cares about me enough to ask me all of these incredible questions. And I feel like my life is definitely getting to a point where I can look back and say, holy shit, I have made a lot of things that I'm proud of and other people can check out as well. And I think it all goes back to that concept of how well can I show an emotion? And I think really what my goal as a kid was just to say, listen, I want people to smile. I want people to be happy. I want people to stop having war. I want there to be peace. I want everybody to love each other and stop being, you know, hurtful. And that's really what I want to achieve in my art. I want people to look at it and see, like, whether it's my music, whether it's my cartoon, whether it's Chasing Gracie, which I really hope that something amazing will happen to, and I feel it intuitively, something amazing will happen with this script and with this pilot. Something that I really care about is just that. It's so special to me that I'm getting attention for just being myself. It's just so great. Oh my God. Thank you so much, Yasa. I really, really, really wish I can give you a big hug for writing out these questions that I find so fun and challenging to answer. And it's just so great to talk. And I am just so honestly grateful and still in disbelief. Truly, truly in disbelief. Thank you so, so much. And hopefully you talk soon.